podcast party to slay a dragon.
The journey from Hengistbury to Last Chance takes 10 days. You pass through the market towns of Thornbury, Blackford, and Ringwood to find them desperately busy, front-loading their harvest festivals like a cluster of doomsday parties. Everyone throwing the biggest celebration they can because they don't know when they'll have the opportunity to spend and to drink and to eat and to make merry and to celebrate, because the shadow of the dragon could descend on those towns at any moment. It's a strange contrast to the many bands of refugees on the road, moving north and west. By contrast, Greyfell Forest is eerie and watchful and gloomy and still as you skirt its northern boundaries. Before descending towards Last Chance, you cannot escape the feeling of being watched by something peering at you from between the trunks of the old growth forest. Last Chance is a tight cluster of one and two story box-like stone buildings surrounded by a wall of rock. The sounds and smells of the dwarf settlement reach you before you see it. Ringing anvils, raucous laughter, fragrant cookfire smoke, gravel, and loam. Guards at the town's gate, shrouded in chain hauberks, regard you stoically as you pass through. Clamor of rolling wagons and shouting merchants carries through the small square. Near the center, a damaged but functional marble and copper fountain gurgles, splashing stray droplets onto the cobblestones. Several benches line the outer rim of this area, where small groups of humans and dwarves loiter. Past the benches, grimy shops face the square. The merchant offerings are eclectic. There are too many plow harnesses from one person and not enough hobnails from the peddler next to him. The simple box bodegas are colorfully painted but fading. Dust and manure spackle the thoroughfare, but there is a small outcry of joy in the road ahead of you. Your cart carries the last shipment of summer oranges from groves around Hengistbury. Your path here took you east and also to higher elevations than the river valley in which Hengistbury sits. And autumn has come a little sooner to Last Chance than it has to Hengistbury. Most of the leaves surrounding this town in the foothills are already a riot of red and orange and yellow as you approach. You did use all of your supply to reach the Last Chance. We don't have to like roleplay you buying groceries, but it is worth knowing that, you know, if you want to travel again, if you take a long rest, you need to spend one supply to receive the benefits of long rest. You can certainly resupply here in Last Chance. Supply costs one gold piece for two supply.
Okay.
The merchant caravan that Maiko set you up with, they jump down off the wagon. They start unloading their apples and oranges and pears and setting up their own stall at the edge of the market square.
Have I been to Last Chance before?
Yes, you've been to Last Chance several times, mostly to pick up illegal smuggling shipments from Viswava. And you know that her apartment is above one of the shops in this square.
What kind of a person is Viswava Vida?
Viswava, I'd say, does not suffer fools lightly. She's been exacting and uncompromising with you, but you have never known her to break her word.
So it's all business.
You would not describe her as generous, however.
Well, I guess I turn to Violet and Malibu and say,
well, here we are. Don't know if the two of you would like to look around perhaps a little bit. Last Chance is quite a burgeoning town of trade. They love their goods here quite a lot. Got oranges and apples. Sort of grabs a spare orange from off the cart, tosses it up, grabs it. You prefer to take a look around or straight to the point? Go meet with Viswava.
It seems time is of the essence. I mean, I would love to look around this town, but I feel that we must hurry a bit. What do you think, Malibu?
Whatever Belton wants to do sounds good with me.
I'm fine with going straight to Viswava's apartment, talking to her and seeing if she knows anything about this map her clan has that they'll lead us to Skull Mountain.
Perhaps if we get through that rather quickly and she's happy to give us that map, then we can look around a bit more.
Yeah, I wonder what's it worth to her. You know, this map to Skull Mountain, it's probably going to be something that she's just not going to give it to us. Even if we say we're going off to Skull Mountain to kill a dragon, I mean, she'll probably laugh at that.
Perhaps we can do a drawing or take some notes, and then we won't need the actual map.
Right, or maybe she needs somebody punched in the face, and I could do that.
Yes, you're very good at that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I think we could just go and have a chat with her, and hopefully she doesn't think I may have screwed her over too bad in any encounter that we've had in the past.
Suave Fadap, you awaken, fully dressed, alone, sprawled in your bed, autumn sunlight streaming in through the window. Sun's been up for an hour or two already, and there's a dull pounding. At first, you think in your own head. It sort of emerges like there's someone pounding into your dream, and you're aroused from sleep and the pounding is still there. And it is a fist knocking on the heavy oak door of your bedroom and office above the locksmith shop where you've installed yourself at last chance.
Mistress Fadap, boss, hello, madam. Are you awake, madam?
Well, I am now. Clearly I am now.
I will reluctantly crack open my door.
You do have a peephole in the door as well, if you'd like to look through without opening it.
I will gently slide open that peephole and suspiciously peer outside.
You can see a pair of eyeballs peering back through the door at you. Below a pair of bushy eyebrows, you can see wisps of long, dark hair. Your assistant, the locksmith, Guivin, is peering in at you. You
nice.
Need assistance, madam?
Wow.
Guivin, that you?
Yes, it is I, Guivin.
Why exactly are you bothering me today? Can I help you with something?
Versatile.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I'm sorry.
All of these things, yes?
It's just that we'd started in on my favorite subject, Guivin. There are a group of visitors, madam, approaching the shop. I recognize a couple of them. Somewhat surprised to see them here in last chance, but I thought you might want to meet them personally. Belton Freedew is among them. Halfling gentleman, Belton Freedew.
Yes, I know who he is. Yes, I know who he is. Yes.
Irascible, untrustworthy, enthusiastic, voluble, one might say. A very voluble gentleman, Belton.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you can keep them entertained, I can be down in a few minutes. I suppose if they are here, we should see what they want from us, see if there's something in it for us.
Very good, madam. Perhaps they would like to buy a lock or some keys.
Perhaps they would. Who can say? Who can say?
I'll keep them busy, and you come down when you've freshened up, madam.
You hear Guivin's booted feet moving away down the corridor and then descending the steps into the locksmith shop. Belton, you know where Vesuava's apartment is. Every time you visit Last Chance, there seems to be a new tenant in the commercial space below her. As the three of you make your way towards it, you see a familiar name hanging on the sign above the door on the sort of shingle. It says, Guivin Wit Dumas, Master Locksmith. And it's gold leaf.
It's Guivin's shop.
I look up at the sign. Oh, yeah, that guy.
Wow, he has his own sign with his own name on it. I can't wait to see him.
Yeah.
Belton.
His own shop.
Belton, I could pull the gold out of that sign with my dagger. You want me to do it?
No, that's Guivin's sign. It's okay. You should leave that sign. As it is, Guivin once traveled with us. He was our friend. Well, I mean, he is. I suppose he's not dead. I mean, I haven't heard that he is, so I thought he was an elk once. That was pretty funny.
I bet you the shop isn't really anything. I bet you he's just barely scraping by.
The door opens violently. Guivin's standing behind and he points an accusing finger at you.
You take that back, Belton Freedew. I am a great success here.
Guivin!
Everyone knows Guivin.
He steps out a little bit. He's barefoot, shivering.
Oh, it is cold.
He steps back in.
Well, yes, it is cold. Could we come in? It's very lovely to see you.
His jaw drops open as he sees you, Violet, and he staggers back into the shadow of the shop, clutching at his heart.
Oh, dear. Dear, dear, dear. Okay, it's all right. I'm not dead. I understand I was goo. I heard that it was
rather... It was horrible. Terrible.
Yes, I was brought back, you see, so I'm here now. I'm not a ghost. You're quite all right, and we can just be happy to see one another. Yes?
Steps towards you and with one thick index finger kind of pokes at your shoulder as if he's expecting the finger to pass through. And when it doesn't,
it is you. It is her.
He turns to Belton.
I thought you were being haunted, Belton, but it is Violet. She's here.
And he throws his arms around you.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's me. It's lovely to see you. You have a very beautiful sign. Can we come in?
Yes, yes, of course. Of course. Everyone, come inside.
He steps to one side of the door and ushers you all in and takes a suspicious look out into the street. And you see on the inside of this door, there are 8
different locks, each more cunning and complicated than the last. And it's a process, but he starts engaging all of them. So they're all deadbolted on your side. He then looks up towards an inner staircase descending from the apartments above. And he says,
"Ah, Mistress Fedap, these are the visitors I told you about. You know, Mr. Freedo, and this is my good friend, Violet."
"Yes, hello. Very pleased to meet you."
"Yes, yes, I am sure. I am sure. Well done. What an unexpected surprise to see you darkening my door on a day such as this."
"Oh, Vesuava, it's me," gestures to himself. "I can tell you are absolutely enthralled with my presence because I bring you business. Better business than could ever be gained by a mere locksmith who is clearly doing very, very poorly."
"You come to my home to speak ill of Guivin, the man who keeps me secure behind 8 locks?"
"Thank you, mistress."
"Those are pretty good locks, I guess."
"Oh, yes, they're beautiful."
"For him, but I'll bet you 10 gold that I could pick every single one of them."
"Belton, you have been 10 minutes in last chance and already you are insufferable."
"Well, that's me."
"I don't know if this is necessary."
"I feel like we started up here and already we are down here."
"Well, we didn't come for you here, Guivin, but..."
Katie, can you please describe Visuava's appearance for us?
Visuava is a female dwarf. She has a prominent facial tattoo over her left eye, like a sickle shape, and then a line coming down over her left cheekbone. She has tattoos running up both forearms and is simply dressed with bright red hair, largely slicked back with a bit falling in front of her face.
"Oh man, she's so cool."
"Well, surely there's a reason you've come here today besides insulting my host and waking me from my sleep. You say something about business. You have a reason to be here?"
"Yes, I have a proposition. Well, I should say we have a proposition. This is Malibu, our esteemed Eladrin barbarian companion. And then this is Violet of the gnomish persuasion and perhaps on the touch necromantic. The three of us have a particular business venture that we have been tasked with that really kind of requires something that you have in your possession. Hoping that you may be able to, at the very least, loan us a view or perhaps even the object itself."
"Well, color me intrigued. I would love to hear more about what this interesting crew you've assembled would like from me here in my humble abode."
"I just want to say you are so cool."
"Agreed. You are very cool. And I think you know it."
"Thank you for this."
"Could it be, perhaps, that we may have a little bit of time in the privacy of your office, away from potential ears that may not necessarily need to hear our business?"
I cast a look over to Guivin, who I assume is not invited to chambers, and I say, "I'm sure this will be brief," and I gesture up the stairs.
"Yes, of course. I could make perhaps a nice spread in the office upstairs. You could speak in confidence there."
"Oh, please.
Yes, I would pick door number 2, because that sounded like snacks."
He dons an apron. He says, "Please, you will proceed upstairs, and Guivin will prepare probably the best food you have ever... In fact, it is not probably. It is for certain the best meal you have ever seen."
"Oh, great."
And so I will just walk up the stairs.
Guivin bustles off to a small kitchenette, and pretty soon you hear a kettle boiling, and you smell sausage and cornbread baking downstairs. Visuava, there's a sort of a residence and a business section to your chambers upstairs, which are separated by a hallway. So you hit the top of the stairs with a landing and make a right. There is a maybe 20 by 20 foot office space dominated by a large, low oak table in the center of the room. There are bookshelves, maps, globes, registries, records, lots of things that you and your compatriots hurriedly salvaged from Deep Hall Point during the retreat. There's more than can be comfortably fit in this room, so there are salvaged items and records bursting from every corner of the small meeting room. The chairs are fairly low to the ground and wide, clearly all of dwarven make and design. Very comfortable for you. Belton, fine for you as well. Plenty of room. And for you as well, Violet. I'd say, Malibu, your knees are kind of up around your elbows a little bit when you sit down in them.
"I apologize, Elfin Man, for my accommodations. Clearly, this is where we have guests such as yourself."
"It's okay. I'll just slouch." And he slouches way down. Legs stick way off. "There, I'm good."
"I wonder if we might ask you a favor, the favor that Belton was mentioning."
"You certainly may. I make no guarantees, but you can try."
Well, you see, you may think this is rather a fool's errand, but we've had some altercations of late, and it seems that we must go to Skull Mountain, and we must try to defeat Siroth. And in order to do that, well, we need a map. Or at least we need to know the route. We don't necessarily need the map itself, but we do need a way to get there. And while we may look a little silly and like we don't know what we're doing, we're actually rather powerful and we have saved Hengistbury recently, so we would love your help. And you're so cool. And I know I keep saying that, but you're just like the coolest person I've ever seen. Anyway, could we look at it?
Well, my small friend, well, I appreciate the compliments and I appreciate your optimism. I have to say that this request is not cool. It is not a cool request. I am not clear what is in it for me. What do I have to gain by showing you the most valuable asset of my people?
What do you need?
Well, frankly, very little from a group of people I assume is quickly to become barbecue for a dragon. This seems like a fool's errand.
We could do something before that.
I understand your point of view, Viswava, as I always have in all of our dealings. I understand as well that there must be a quid pro quo, so to speak, a this for that. You know, you're not going to give away something for nothing. That's just smart business. In terms of our quest, as you may think, to go and kill a dragon, I know exactly what you're thinking. I thought that exact same thing a few days ago myself. A fool's errand. But let me ask you this, Viswava, just because you and I are on the level, and I don't want to bring up bad past dealings, but this dragon, Siroth, everybody hates dragons, especially evil dragons. This one in particular, it did you dirty at Deep Hall Point.
Okay, if you want to go there, great, we will go there. Yes, the dragon, you could say, did me dirty. That is a way that you could say what the dragon did, destroy my people, ravage a society, besmirch my name. Yes, she did all of these things. You want to talk about a quid pro quo? Okay, I give you a quid pro quo. You want to talk about being done dirty by others, right? You know of my dealings, Belt, and you understand our business relationship. You may remember. It was not so long ago I forged an alliance with the ogres near Deepcrest Chasm. You may have heard of this, I do not know. But what I can tell you is it was not done in good faith. It was a double cross. The instant I make an alliance with Junog, the ruler of those ogres, what does he do? Kills all of my men and takes from me the mace that was given to me by my grandmother. You see, all the things I have in this room mean nothing to me so much as this mace did. So if you really want this map, I will give it to you, provided that you assist me in retrieving my mace from those ogres. If you are willing to do this, then you have yourself a deal. And if not, you may see yourself out.
At that point, the door to the meeting room opens and a tempting aroma fills the chamber. Bangers and mash. And
the cornbread
is still baking.
Oh.
Guivin puts a steaming steel platter full of sausage and potatoes with several wooden ladles sticking out of it. I serve this family style because we are family. He slaps Belton and Violet on one shoulder each. Enjoy, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you, Guivin.
Wow. He stands back. Could be anything else, madam.
I think my friends have enough to digest as it is. We can let them think about what they need.
Very good. He gives a neat bow and withdraws, shutting the door behind
him. Mm, really good.
I will partake, of course, in the bangers and mash, but first a little bit of information, if you don't mind. On the potential that we go after these ogres, you said the leader's name was Junog?
Yes, Junog.
How many ogres are we talking here?
They totaled maybe 6, 7. Kill a dragon, then surely you could kill 6, 7 ogres.
Sure. 6 or 7 ogres. Big leader ogre, Junog, and all you really want is the mace, right? We don't have to kill all the ogres to get the mace back, right?
You can do whatever you want. Yeah, as long as I get my mace, then we have ourselves a deal. If you want to befriend them, if you want to, I don't know, evangelize to them, I do not care. It makes no difference to me.
Okay, I see where we're going here. Your intent is to go to Deepcrest Chasm and take this mace back from these guys, yeah?
Not my preference. My preference would be to stay here and eat bangers and mash, but...
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
This is open to negotiation, I suppose. It depends on how confident you feel in your abilities.
Well, 4 heads are better than 3. As Violet says, you are the coolest person that she knows.
Yeah, she keeps saying.
That's true.
How many people do you know?
Oh, I know, I know Mercury, and I know Guivin, and I know Belton, and I know Malibu, and I know Mort.
And I point to Mort, who's sitting in a little cup around my neck. He was sleeping, like, curled up in it so you couldn't see him. But I give him a little poke, and his little head comes out, and he squeaks.
And that's pretty much who I know. Oh, this is so good.
A very nice pet that you have. Your interest in me is beginning to make a lot more sense given the list of people that you have named. My preference is that you bring the mace to me. You want this beloved family heirloom, you bring the mace to me. But if you need me to guide you, I am willing to negotiate.
How about this? All we really need, we don't need the map per se. We could just make a copy of it. Since it's a family heirloom. How about this? I'm just going to proposition this. And I know you hear me all the time talking to you about deals and business and all that jazz. But listen, here's the way I think this may work out to everybody's benefit. You keep the map. You come with us to Deepcrest Chasm and take back the mace with us. And then when we get back, we can make a copy of the map.
I expect more from you, honestly.
Well, I expect more from myself. How about, whatever we find in the cave at Deepcrest Chasm, you can take back. God, why am I saying this? This is coming out of my mouth and I'm feeling dirty just saying it. Whatever you can take is yours.
I just want to jump in to mention the Suava, for what it's worth. You know what Junog's headquarters is, and while it is near Deepcrest Chasm, it is not, in fact, a cave.
Oh.
It is a ruined hall called Toymaker Hall that Junog and his band have occupied, but they certainly did not build it.
Suppose I can share this with them.
If you would like, you can all make an intelligence history check to determine what you might know about Toymaker Hall. And Viswava, since you are most familiar with the region, you can have advantage on that check.
Belton got a 5.
Malibu got a 10.
Violet got a 15.
Viswava got a 14.
Belton and Malibu, you've never heard of this place. Viswava, you know of it because it's local and the home of one of your worst enemies. And Violet, you've heard of it because it has a somewhat interesting arcane reputation. Toymaker Hall was once a manor house belonging to an artificer, a toy-making artificer, known throughout the region as Uncle Gizmo.
Oh my goodness, it's Uncle Gizmo's house!
In decades past, it was a sort of rite of passage for children from many of the neighboring market towns. You know, you'd save all year, be like a family trip or an academy outing to go and visit Toymaker Hall and meet Uncle Gizmo, or to order something delivered from Toymaker Hall as a special present. It's a source of joy and wonder for children throughout this region of Endora.
And a little creepy.
We were going to get to go there, and I never got to go because I got sick that day, and other people went, and I heard all about it, and I was so jealous, and I'm so excited to go. And I guess Terrible Ogres are living there now, but there might be other things. And could we negotiate anything we find we give to you? Because there might be something very cool in there, and, I'm sorry, I just said rather a lot. That's fine. I'm just excited. It's Uncle Gizmo. Have you ever been? I mean, when it was fun.
I'm afraid I did not ever have the pleasure of meeting Uncle Gizmo. Pains me to think of what may have become of him. I wish his spirit well. If you would like to go on a trip to this place, I am happy to assist you in any way that I can. This mace was handed down from my grandmother to my father to me. It is silver. It is large. It has a ring of runes, Vadap family runes, around the base that spins. You cannot miss it. If you find it, I will know it on sight. If you see it with the runes of my people on the bottom, you will know that is the one that belongs to me. And they say that this is the mace that kept us safe as we fled Seeroth.
Thank you for that description. How far away is Toymaker Hall from where we are right now, Last Chance?
At the southern tip of Deepcrest Chasm, overlooking this historic gouge in the earth, is Toymaker Hall. It will be about a full day's overland journey from Last Chance to Toymaker Hall. You can follow the road east for about half the distance, but you must then off-road, as since Toymaker Hall fell into ruin, the roads leading to it have no longer been maintained.
Well, knowing that it's a day's travel from Last Chance to Toymaker Hall, I would say that we provision up at least for the trip to and from, and then head out.
You know, you can buy as much supply as you can carry, but it is one gold piece for every 2 supply that you do buy.
And we're out of supply.
The trip here has completely blanked us.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Okay.
All right. I will buy 8 supply just to be full up again. So that's 4 gold pieces?
Correct.
Okay.
Malibu can carry 18 supply.
Oh my God.
Whoa.
His strength is 18. I'll just fill up. So that's 9?
Correct.
All right. I will do the same as Violet. I will also take 8.
Since it is early morning now, if you set out immediately, you would reach Toymaker Hall shortly after nightfall tonight.
Do we know anything about Junog himself?
Junog is many things. He is a traitor. He is an angry man. He has a temper. He is loyal to no one. But what he is not is a fool. And it would be a mistake to assume that you can pull a fast one over on him. He sees a lot. He's not a stupid leader, but he is a cruel leader.
His crew also includes a few orcs who do kind of fetch and carry work for him.
Well,
a dangerous combination.
Yeah,
there's a reason why I have not gone to try and retrieve it before now. It's a dangerous idea.
We should just head over to Toymaker Hall, and if we can get away with this mace without having to get squished by a whole bunch of ogres, because 6 or 7 ogres, that's a lot.
And some orcs, right?
Some orcs. Yeah, and some orcs, exactly.
Do they speak troll?
We could try to sneak in.
You know, do they speak troll?
I don't think ogres speak troll. I think they usually speak ogre. Giant, I would think.
Do we know what they speak?
You could make an intelligence culture check to see what you know about ogres.
Ooh.
Holy crap.
Malibu rolled a 20.
Great. Violet only rolled an 11.
Yeah, Belton doesn't know jack about ogres. He got a 4.
Your quote-unquote parents occasionally told you some sneering, derisive stories about ogres, Malibu. Though smaller than their giant ancestors, ogres are nearly twice as tall as most humans. They can see in the dark. They're formidable melee combatants. Their powerful blows force all but the strongest warriors to the ground. Most ogres do indeed speak giant in addition to the common tongue.
Yeah, so they like to hit things because they're, you know, they're big and strong. And they do speak troll. Yeah, troll. Yeah, because the trolls could speak to them. So yeah, they can speak troll.
That's surprising. But yeah. Hey, I don't know anything about ogres, so I guess I'll just
Malibu, are you deliberately lying about them speaking troll?
No, Malibu thinks the language giant is troll because he's only heard trolls speak it.
Got it.
So he calls it troll.
Got it.
If we head out now, then we can get there by nightfall.
We can do it. Let's go.
Healing potions.
I have 2. I could get some more.
They certainly would be on offer in the market in Last Chance for the standard price of 50 gold pieces per healing potion.
Yeah, I would like to get 3, please.
Okay, that will be 150 gold pieces.
Yes.
Malibu wants 3, but he's only going to buy 1, saving his gold.
If Belton saw Malibu taking 1 healing potion, he would think, gosh, how many healing potions does this guy have? He doesn't have that many from what I remember. Last time I looked at this bag, anyway. Hey, Malibu.
Yeah?
You think maybe you could use more than just 1 healing potion?
No, I can heal myself. I'm good.
Okay. Sure?
Yeah, and I'm going to be one talking to the ogres, right? Because I speak
No. That is a negative on that one, sir. No.
Why?
Tell you what, if we're lucky, we won't be speaking to any of those ogres at all. We'll be in and out of there without them even noticing.
Wait, I'll put on my sheriff's badge. He puts on his little sheriff's star from Hemingsbury. There we go. Okay, we're good.
Within the hour, you complete your purchases. While Viswava, you polish your scimitar and dagger. And Guivin helps you to strap on your leather armor. You meet the companions outside the shop. Guivin twists his hands nervously in knots in front of him. And then when he notices that he's doing that, he tries to stop and then ends up twisting the ends of his beard into 2 knots. Watches you get smaller and smaller as you head out into the forested hills beyond Last Chance. Hi, everybody. Hope you're enjoying episode 7 of Podcast Party to Slay a Dragon, presented by Cast Party and EN Publishing. The show will be back shortly for the second part. For this series, we're using Level Up Advanced 5th Edition to enhance the classic D&D 5e experience. For more info on these cool new rules and enhancements for your 5th edition D&D games, visit levelup5e.com. You can also purchase this adventure as part of Level Up A5e's awesome new release, To Save a Kingdom, available in both hardcover and PDF formats. Thanks so much to all of you who helped make Attack on Copper Coil become a gold bestseller on Dungeon Masters Guild. As a result, this adventure will form the second part of a new cast party actual play podcast series, together with Secrets of the Blind Palace. The series will premiere in October 2024, right here in this feed. I will be the Dungeon Master for that series, and we've been announcing the players each week on Cast Party's social media channels. Returning for that show will be Katie Lear, who debuted as Viswaba Fadop in this episode of To Slay a Dragon. Katie is a licensed counselor, D&D enthusiast, and New York Times featured author interested in making anxiety therapy fun for kids. When she's not in the therapy office, Katie runs a D&D-based online coaching program for tweens and teens called Young Dragon Slayers. Young Dragon Slayers helps kids and teens forge meaningful friendships and practice social skills through online Dungeons & Dragons. They connect kids with like-minded peers across the U.S. and Canada to embark on a homebrew adventure facilitated by a professional DM in a safe and inclusive environment. If you happen to be in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, you can join them for summer camp this July. Their online course, Dragon Leaders, will be available to aspiring Dungeon Masters everywhere starting this summer. Learn more at youngdragonslayers.com. This summer, Cast Party returns to the Good Witch in Hastings on Hudson, New York, on Saturday, July 13. Join us for an evening of dragon-slaying, dungeon-delving, treasure-hunting adventure. Our professional Dungeon Masters will lead your party through a tabletop adventure. No previous D&D experience is necessary. Admission includes a 3-hour Dungeons & Dragons experience with a professional Dungeon Master, a delicious drink and snack, courtesy of the Good Witch, plus a few surprises. Located just a short train ride from NYC in the historic Hastings on Hudson Station on the Metro North Hudson Line. Planning to attend with a group? We'll make sure you're seated with friends and family. New player or attending alone, we'll make sure you're at a table to suit your experience level. Tickets are on sale now at cast-party.com. Coming this week to Dungeon Masters Guild is The Last Voyage of the Cold Comfort by yours truly, Tal Aviazer, with full-color maps by Cast Party's Carolyn Fox. Deep in the Underdark, beneath the Sword Coast, adventurers discover the secrets of a mysterious vessel adrift on the Dark Lake. This is a new 2 to 3 hour short Dungeons & Dragons adventure for 3 to 7 characters, levels 1 through 4. Look for it later this week at dmsguild.com. Cast Party's professional Dungeon Masters are available to hire for online games. We have games for kids as well as adults, and our DMs can run almost any of the official Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition adventures, as well as third-party adventures, and even some we've created ourselves. Details at cast-party.com. If you've been following Cast Party's other actual play podcast, Descent into Avernus, you'll know that we have finally reached the grand finale. After 3 years of recording that show, I won't include any spoilers here, but we are going to do a retrospective episode of Power Word Talk this spring with all of the DM and players from Podcast Party Descent into Avernus. If you have questions you'd like us to answer on that show, you can email them to info@cast-party.com, or if you're on our Discord, you can message me there. Do you ever feel like you have a great visual picture in your head, but you need a little help putting it into words? Well, with a subscription to Describe, you can access thousands of descriptions of monsters, spells, locations, and more, as well as maps, music, and sound effects to enhance your games, only at Describe.com. That's DSCRYB.com. Would you like 10% off that subscription? Follow the link in the show notes and use the discount code CASTPARTY, all one word, all caps, to save 10% on your first subscription. As always, we're offering monthly free adventures with our Dungeon Masters. These free games fill up quickly, so if you'd like to grab a spot, you should join our email list or our Discord server. Links to both can be found at cast-party.com. You can watch episodes of Podcast Party on YouTube, complete with artwork, battle maps, character portraits, and even a little bit of animation. Check the show notes for the link or visit cast-party.com. If you enjoy Podcast Party, please follow the show, rate us, and leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. Message us on social media or email us at info@cast-party.com. Follow us on Facebook at CastPartyDND, on Twitter at CastParty2, on Instagram at Cast_Party, on TikTok at Cast_Party, or on Threads at Cast_Party. Thanks very much for listening, and now back to our adventure. on the road to Toymaker Hall. Lush woodland foliage covering leagues of stony hills and valleys between here and Toymaker Hall. The tree canopy splays rays of sun. Careful steps are needed to scramble around loose moss-covered stone and exposed roots. So we're going to do a few things here. I'm going to ask you to take a look at the journey activities, and I will also tell you there are some stakes involved in navigating these forested hills. It's going to require a group athletics check to see how your day-long journey fares across this
terrain. Ooh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry in advance.
Yep.
It's okay. Take a few moments to choose your journey activities first to let me know what you'd like to do during the journey, and then we'll resolve the group athletics check to see how you fare along the way.
I have chosen my journey activity.
Me too.
Andy, have you chosen yours?
Yep.
And Katie, have you chosen yours?
I have.
Matt, we'll start with you. What would Belton like to do during the journey?
Belton does choose to scout. So going at a distance and checking along to make sure that nothing's going to jump out and pull the rug out from underneath.
Belton's nimble halfling feet eat up the miles to Toymaker Hall. You range ahead of the party. Make sure that nothing is lying in wait for you along the way. Go ahead and make a wisdom perception check.
That's a 16.
16 is a success. You will gain advantage on any perception checks made against any attempts to surprise or ambush you during your journey and in Toymaker Hall as you successfully
awesome.
Scout the route
awesome.
And the surrounding area around Toymaker Hall. So that's a pretty important boon that you've picked up there, Belt. So you'll just remember that. Advantage on perception checks made against any attempts to surprise or ambush you. What would Violet like to do?
Violet would like to pray.
And describe how Violet prays and whom she prays to.
Okay. She's just going to take a minute while everybody's doing their things. She's going to put a little blanket down and she's going to put Mort down beside her. And she's going to not really know how she should put the hands or anything, but I guess she's going to just clasp them in front of her. And she's going to say,
hello. I don't really know who I have to thank for coming back other than Mercury. But I know that he asked for help from someone, and I know that usually that help comes from a deity, and he hasn't told me about it. Although I was reborn about 2 weeks ago, I wasn't born yesterday, and I know something's going on. So I just want to say thank you, and I hope I can someday find out who you are, and maybe thank you in a better way? I don't know, but I'm very happy to be back with my friends adventuring, and thank you.
And that's it.
Awesome. Can you make an intelligence religion check for me, please?
Oh, I got a 19.
That is also a success. There is a rustling, and your eyes are drawn up, Violet, into the multicolored trees. They seem to wave and undulate as if in greeting to you. And a ray of golden sunlight passes between the yellow and red leaves and seems to caress and surround you for a moment before it's obscured by a cloud. You're momentarily outlined in a kind of spotlight on the ground as you kneel and pray. The entire party will gain advantage to one ability check or attack made while within this region. This group ability check or attack, by the way, that's one use, but anyone can use it. But you can, as players, decide as a group, you know, is it okay if I use it now? Okay.
Okay,
one of
got
like
it.
A shared, yeah, a right. shared thing that one of you can,
oh,
can
okay.
use. That any one of
okay.
you.
That includes Toymaker Hall as well.
That's correct. That is Toymaker Hall
That's
is within
why
this
I did
region.
It.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Okay. Cool.
You also gain a boon or discovery. So I'm opening up my boon and discoveries table. and I'd like you to roll a 1d10, Violet.
Okay. 6.
Can you roll a 1d20 for me?
13.
As you are picking up the various items that you've arranged around yourself, you're sort of improvising a little ritual, not entirely sure who you might be pleasing or offending by doing it. As you collect
yeah.
things, you notice that there is a patch of saffron lilies underneath the blanket that attract your attention. Can you roll a 1d4 for me?
Yeah. Okay.
Roll all the dice.
3.
There are 3 saffron lilies that you did not notice when you laid the blanket down, but you notice them as you roll the blanket up. And you're familiar with this flower, Violet, and you know that a creature can use a bonus action to eat a saffron lily and gain resistance to poison damage for 1 hour.
Cool.
Malibu?
Malibu's going to kind of walk on the edge of the group, and he's going to be looking at the flowers and the plants and smelling the air, and everyone will notice the white hair he had in previous days is all gone, and now it's all these like pinks and blues and yellows, and his attitude just seems lighter, and he is going to try to befriend an animal.
Okay.
Nice.
Your choice, Malibu, of either a wisdom or charisma animal handling check.
That's a 17.
17 is a success.
He's making flowers open. He's popping seeds. He's making little plants grow as they walk along using druidcraft.
Can you roll a d8 for me, please, Malibu?
A 2.
As you're leaving these small offerings and scouting, you sight a hunting hawk, Malibu, tangled in a branch because of the jesses on its legs. It's clearly a trained hunting hawk that has become inadvertently snared in a bramble. It looks up at you calmly, tries to raise its foot. You can see that it is incapable of freeing itself. Kind of ducks and weaves its head a little bit, watching you curiously to see what your next move will be.
Very carefully, Malibu walks up and he's like, "It's okay. I'm going to free you. I'm going to free you from this." And he's going to keep his hands low, not near the hawk's eyes or beak or anything or wings, and reach down towards the leg that's tangled and try to untie it.
It lowers its beak, cocks its head to one side, stares at you proudly and fiercely, but allows you to free it. As soon as you do, it launches itself into the air with a shower of feathers and a rush of wind. You can feel the strength of the bird as it bursts past your face. Your hair whips up around it as it launches into the air. And it flies high above you, Malibu, but you notice for the remainder of the day, it is circling in sight of you. It seems to be watching you and watching the surrounding area around you like a scout. And you see it riding the currents. It occasionally disappears briefly, but then reappears in wide gliding arcs, and it stays with you at a distance of a couple of hundred feet above you at times, but never really leaving sight for more than a few seconds. You see it occasionally perching in nearby trees to wait for you to catch up with it, but it seems to be repaying its debt to you by keeping an eye out for danger during your journey.
Nice.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Look at that bird. It's amazing.
And finally, Viswava, what would you like to do during the journey?
Viswava is keeping an eye on practicality here, sort of watching her compatriots go on these spiritual journeys. She has decided to cook. She's been spending some time with Gwyvan. You know, she's really appreciates the bangers and mash. And is going to gruffly and quietly start working on some food.
At midday, you stop. Viswava, having been provided with sustenance for the trail by Gwyvan and elaborate and florid instructions on how to prepare it, sets about to create a lunch. This will be a wisdom survival check.
A 21.
That is a critical success.
Right.
All right.
A tasty meal.
Okay, so describe this lunch for the ages for us, Viswava.
Oh, I believe Viswava has created some Dutch eggs, like some breaded fried eggs. There's bacon. There is some sort of a crusty bread and a large amount of baked beans, like copious baked beans.
Uh-huh.
You know, in attempting to avoid a spiritual experience, Viswava.
Somehow.
Yes, you may have inadvertently created one in spite of yourself. It is a transformative experience. It is so satisfying and filling that all four of you will gain an additional hit die for the rest of the journey and your time in Toymaker Hall due to the critical success. So what this will mean is, should you take a short rest at any point during the journey or during your exploration of Toymaker Hall, you basically get an extra free hit die to spend on regaining hit points without having to actually use one of your own hit dice to do that.
Awesome.
Nice, nice.
What a delight.
Wow, what a successful little trek we've had.
Well, we shall see, because it is nap time.
Wow.
I'm knocking on wood.
There's no doubt that that was an impressive round of journey activities, but traveling through the steep hills does require a group athletics check. And right. just like the activities uh-huh. you've just done, you can have a success or a failure here, and there might be some consequences or some advantages to doing so. But I would like everybody to make a strength athletics check. And God. If there's anything you can do that you feel like would improve your chances of succeeding at this skill check, you can feel free to declare those things or make those adjustments.
I'm just going to throw salt over my left shoulder because this is not good for me. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't have anything.
I could rage.
Oh my God.
Belton got thank God.
Okay, you offset my horrible, Ooh. Horrible roll.
What did Belton get?
Belton got a 2.
Oh,
it was
God.
A 3 with a -1 modifier, sorry.
Violet got a 17 somehow. She's in the zone.
Malibu, the strongest guy here, got a 10.
Okay, it is all up to Viswava.
Viswava got a 16.
Okay, that is a group success.
Oh, yes.
My God.
Ooh.
Close. That was close.
Yeah, not a critical success, but a safe success. You navigate a safe and speedy path over the hills and vales. No misadventures befall you en route. So you still have the benefits of all of the advantages you picked up as a result of a journey activity, and no hardships befall you during the day-long journey to Toymaker Hall. You arrive awesome. Safely. The single-story Toymaker Hall may have once been impressive in its splendor, but now paint peels from crumbling walls and moldy strips, and columns that once bore the weight of the structure lean, cracks are spider-webbing down their lengths. The house sags, groaning in the wind that whistles through shattered windows and over pockmarked siding. There's no light visible through the windows, and the front door is not just open, but violently smashed in. Arrayed in front of the door are 4 pikes, and atop each pike is a ragged, windblown lump. So, Belton, worth noting, it is after dark. And this time you really will need a light source of some kind. There's
goody.
No Come light on, around help. You and no light coming from the mansion.
I guess I'll just...
Do you want to hold my hand?
Well...
You want to ride on my back?
Yes to you and no to you. Just because I think if I pull out a torch, they're going to see us coming, right?
You could just hold my cloak if holding my hand is too weird.
It's not weird. It's just not something it's going to make it a better experience for what we're doing.
Should we walk around and maybe not go in the front door? Should we just sort of try to sneak in?
I don't know anything about this place. I assume there's a back entrance. Maybe not. I don't know. We can always look. Doesn't hurt to try.
Viswava, as they banter back and forth, you feel a clench in your stomach as you stare at those 4 pikes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I worried this might be the case.
Oh, no.
I don't like the sound of those lumps.
You have your grim suspicions, but in this light, from this distance, you can't be sure, Viswava. You'd have to get a little closer.
I appreciate your strategy here, but I do wonder if it's worth at least figuring out what or who is on those pikes.
Sure, let's go look, just quietly.
I can't see anything really that far ahead of me, but there are things on the pikes. What?
Yeah, right in front of us.
He's squinting.
Belton's
like,
heads. It's probably heads, Belton.
Yeah, the rest of you can see they're between 30 and 60 feet from your position.
Should we make perception checks or should we sneak up there?
I mean, Belton really can't see them. Malibu mm-hmm. and Violet, you can try to make perception checks. Wisdom perception.
Malibu got a 14.
Oh, good, because Violet got an 11.
Malibu, they are clearly heads. You can see the wisps of beards blowing in the night wind. And the smell of decaying flesh reaches your nostrils from here.
I don't want to say what it is, what they are. I don't want to say it.
I'm not disturbed by it. I'm willing to try to sneak up there.
Violet, it's heads. Violet, it's heads. I think they're dwarves.
Oh, that's all right. They can't hurt us now.
Oh, I'm not afraid of them, but... And he jerks a thumb over at Viswava.
Would it help you to see that, or would you rather not? It's up to you, since it may be your friends or countrymen and women.
Viswava sets her jaw and I believe is going to walk a bit closer and see if she can recognize these heads for herself.
If you'd like to, you can make a dexterity stealth check. Anyone who's approaching and would like to sneak.
Oh, nice. Violet got a 20.
Malibu got a 22.
Viswava got a 14.
The three of you creep closer. Viswava, you already know the truth. And as you approach, it becomes undeniable. You recognize all four of these dwarves, all cowards from Last Chance, all members of your crew. There's a wooden sign below each head in common, and it is the same six words on each of the four pikes. They read, "This is what happens to cowards." The writing is crude, and it looks like it's been burned into salvaged, misshapen wooden planks.
I don't like that.
I think we should kill them.
Yeah, I think somebody will die tonight.
I would prefer that not be us. I'm just going to sort of edge on the side of caution here. I don't exactly know what it is that you guys are looking at, that you want to kill these ogres for, but I'm assuming it's bad.
It's her friend's heads on pikes. They're sort of cut off first and then plunged onto the spiky tips of the pike. And some of them are coming out of like an eye socket and some of them went out to straight at the top. But it's quite disturbing.
You saying that, knowing what I know about you, that's pretty bad then.
Yes.
Suave, I'm just so sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully you have the help that I need to make this right.
Can we keep our stealth checks that we just rolled to get, like, to the door?
Sure.
That's when I roll a stealth roll, and I get a natural one on my stealth.
Oh, no.
Butting with perhaps overconfidence that he could stealth in the middle of the dark without seeing anything, I think Belton would, like, trip over a rock and just face plant on the ground.
Belton, I told you you could hold my cloak. Maybe you should.
Ow. And he just, like, grabs his knee. I guess I'll hold on to your cloak for now.
Ow.
Okay, come on.
As I did mention earlier, the doors are smashed off their hinges.
And what's a little to the right?
Ooh, a window?
You see, there's a window in the wall, Malibu.
Someone peek in the window. I'll peek in the door.
I'm pretty short.
Belton.
What?
I need to get on your shoulders.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, sure.
Okay, so just kneel down a little bit.
Okay.
I'm going to put one leg over this shoulder.
Well, why don't I just cup my hands and then you just put your foot in my... Ah! Okay.
Okay, stand up.
I am standing.
Okay, and so can I see if I'm on his shoulder?
Yes, yeah. So you're like the children stacked up in the trench coat to imitate an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you do get up in his shoulders and you are able to see in that window. Malibu, what you can see is an entrance hall. The doors are smashed off their hinges from the outside, right? Like something smashed in these doors. They're lying on the ground inside the hall. And there are signs of rampage, torn carpet, smashed floorboards, running up the hall to the north. And it looks like it's going to open into a larger chamber north of the entrance hall, Malibu. And you can see more signs of damage. There are debris, stonework, and wooden planks lying in a pile in that larger room. And also just like rot and mold along some of the floorboards as well. Make a wisdom perception check, Malibu.
Will my nose help me?
Not in this case. This is an eyesight thing.
Okay. 11.
That's all that you notice, Malibu. Violet, you peer in the window, standing on Belton's shoulders. You're looking into what might be a mechanical room or machine room. There is some sort of vat, like might be used to hold compressed air. And there is a large crate containing iron shafts and gears piled against the eastern wall. So you notice that something large suddenly hurls itself against the wall with the window that you're looking in. There is a massive gray-skinned figure clad in mismatched animal hides. You smell hot breath emanating from his mouth as he just kind of brings his head level with the window on the inside.
Oh, he saw me?
He says, "I smell gnome. Who's there? Who is it? Time to laugh, time to gawk. Who's there?"
It's clearly an ogre, judging by the massive head. His nostrils are flaring. His eyes, you realize, are missing. He has no eyes. They look like they've been gouged out.
Oh.
He says,
"I smell you. I smell you, gnome. What do you want? Time to laugh at Junog. What do you want?"
He curls his fingers around the steel window frame. shakes it a little bit. It's masoned pretty tight. The window's not going anywhere.
Oh boy. I can also smell you. I didn't know you were here. I thought this was where Uncle Gizmo was. I heard about it when I was a very small child, and I always wanted to come. Are you with Uncle Gizmo?
Make a charisma deception check.
Oh, shit. I am not good at this.
Oh, my gosh.
Why did I look in the window? 14?
Much too late for toys. Little gnome. Different kind of fun here these days.
Oh, really? Did you buy out Uncle Gizmo? Do you make things?
I don't make anything except people dead. I'll show you.
Oh, no, thank you.
And I'm going to jump down.
Oh, my shoulders. Ah.
Shh, Belden, be very quiet.
Where are you going? Come back.
Well, you just said you're going to make me dead.
Faintly speaking, very much lower than the window.
I was only joking with you. We could be friends. Just need you to come around and open the door for me.
Can I hear this?
Yeah, you can hear it, Belden.
Oh, I am 100% going to try to determine if this ogre is lying to try to grab us and eat us. Can I do an insight check for that?
Yeah, I think he is.
Sure. Wisdom insight.
Ah, fuck. I got a 9.
You're free to draw whatever conclusions you wish.
I'm feeling very Hansel and Gretel-y right now.
Oh, Junog's just got himself in a bit of a pickle, and so I lost my temper a bit. But we could still be friends. Just need you to slip the lock on my old door here.
Why are you locked in there? Did you get locked in by accident?
No, weren't no accident. Tell you what, let me out, and I'll tell you all about it. But I'd watch your asses in there. It's just not safe for a little girl like you. Just come through the entrance hall, right around to the right. I'll meet you at the door. You can get me out, and I'll fill in all the details for you.
All right, I just have a question. Have you had any food in there? Like, have you had food recently so that you're like, oh, well, I just ate a whole bunch of food and I'm not hungry at all? Honestly, if you put something in front of me, I couldn't possibly eat it. Or have you not eaten at all and therefore I would look delicious and then you wouldn't tell me anything because I would be dead?
You got something to eat? Bread, victuals, maybe a little lamb or an eel. I could use something.
Would you take that instead of eating me? Because I have to be solid on this point.
You know my name, Junog. What's your name, love?
Hey, he just called himself Junog.
My name's Violet, like the flower.
That's a pretty name, ain't it? Tell you what, Violet, you just slip me a little food, and I'll set my stomach to rights, and then you won't have to worry about me feeling peckish, right? I'm a bit starving in here.
All right, let me see what I have. Just give me a moment. Belden, we need some food. Do you have any food?
I'm talking very quietly.
I did kind of swipe a couple of the bangers from yesterday. I didn't want to tell Quiven, but like that was really good.
Oh, that's perfect. That is perfect.
So here, I mean, I'm just hoping that he's not like going to grab for you. You know what I mean? Like you give him a little food and then all of a sudden he grabs your face, you know?
No, I won't put my face near it. I'll just hold it up.
I mean, he's got no eyes.
I'll throw it. I'll throw it. It seems rude to throw sausages at a blind ogre.
That's a matter of opinion. I'm just saying.
It seems rude.
It does. I don't like that visual.
You don't feel like a hero when you do that.
Okay, thank you. You really saved the day here, Belden, with these. All right, I have to get hoisted back up a little bit.
Okay, here. Let me get down again. Here.
Okay.
Mr. Junog, I have some food here for you. Just sticking it through the window a little bit, and you can take it gently if you please. That would be nice.
And I'm going to hold up whatever sausages I have.
You're an angel, Violet.
Fingers scrabble at the sausages. He fumbles it and they drop inside. And you hear him kind of immediately dart down to the ground and scoop them up and begin munching like greedily, like at furious pace.
Oh, that's just like a little taste of heaven, that is.
Yes, they were very good.
I'm feeling better already. Just go in that door there. And, sharp right. Watch your ass. It's proper dangerous in here. Wouldn't want anything to happen to you.
Oh, thanks. Before I go, do you need any water? Are you thirsty? Because maybe that you haven't been given any water, which is not very nice.
I got a trough in here. I'm all right for water.
Okay, all right.
You're a kind soul, Violet. It's rare to meet someone like you, you know.
Oh, well, I look forward to meeting you. I'll see if I can get there. I don't know. It's like you said, I have to watch my ass and everything. Do you have any suggestions? Just to be quiet?
Real quiet. And, if you smell something sweet, something real nice, like flowers and twilight and joy, you hold your nose right quick. Don't breathe it in. It's a trick.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, until later.
I'm going to jump down.
Belton, let's go to the others. We have to talk to them.
I'm a little concerned about this whole idea here, Violet.
I know, that's why we're going to discuss it. We're going to talk about it, but we have to be away from the window.
All right, let's go.
Okay. So we're going to go to the others.
What are you guys doing talking to the window? What are you doing?
You're never going to believe who was in there. It was Junok.
Did you kill him?
Is he dead?
No, because I've sort of gone a different way. I sort of talked to him. He's been imprisoned in this room that he's in. He's locked in there. He can't get out, so he won't be a problem when we go inside. But he did say several times that I should watch my ass if I go inside there. And he said it's very dangerous, which he already knew. But he was hungry, so I gave him some food in an attempt to sort of throw him off and maybe befriend him a little so he was less hostile. Also, he has no eyes. It's rather sad. And he told me that if we go inside, if we smell something beautiful like flowers or something that smells wonderful to us and makes us happy, we should be sure to quickly block our noses and not breathe it in because it's a trick. So everybody keep that in mind, okay?
Okay.
And he's locked in there, so we don't need to worry about him for now. It's possible your mace may be in that room, in which case that's another story, but he seems to sort of like me, so maybe I could get it, I don't know.
I thought we weren't supposed to trust him. Like, he's a liar.
Yeah, that's kind of...
And you fed him snacks? You gave him a snack?
I think it's rather disarming, because I don't think many people are nice to him. Sometimes all it takes is somebody being unexpectedly kind to you, and it sort of, I don't know, it softens you a bit, so maybe that's true for Ogus.
Yeah, perhaps that's been a problem all these years, like when I tried to forge an alliance with him and then he murdered everybody I've ever known. Perhaps we just should have spoken more affirmations to him.
I see where you're coming from. You're right, of course. But let's see what happens when we go in. I'm sure we'll get your mace. But he said to be very quiet, and I think we already knew that, so we should try to be quiet.
So there's a hallway, Belton, because you can't see very far. There's a hallway and then a bigger room, and it looks clear, but it looks like there's like been a fight.
You don't see any light sources in there, like torches or anything?
Nope.
Crap. All right, well, I'm no use to you guys in there if I can't see, so if it's just this one ogre and then a hallway full of sweet-smelling flowers, I guess it's not too bad of an idea for me to light a torch so I can at least see a little bit.
Well, there are other things in there, but it's true, if you can't see, you need to see.
Maybe you should stay back then? Maybe you should go first.
I don't want to be out here with the heads and all that jazz. So I'm more than happy to light a torch. And Belton produces a torch from his backpack and lights it.
Torch blazes to light in Belton's hand.
Here
Who's
we go.
Going first? You, Belton, or me?
Well, now that I can see, I guess I would be okay with going first.
All right, right behind you.
I'm going last.
Yeah, put the little one behind me.
Belton and Malibu, you step in. Belton, you see the same signs of destruction and rampage that Malibu noticed during his inspection, but as you step in, you notice that there are four odd sculptures, two on each of the walls. They depict gnomes holding horns in front of their faces with their cheeks inflated like they're blowing into them. And as you step in, a disembodied, crackling, distorted voice emanates from each of those four horns. And it says,
"Welcome, children, to Toymaker Hall. Make sure you all hold hands and stay with your group. If you're extra well-behaved during today's visit, old Uncle Gizmo might have a whiz-warbulous surprise for you to take home at the end." Parents and guardians, please note that surprises are not included with your admission and must be purchased separately.
Whoa, we're gonna get a surprise. Yes.
Belton turns to Malibu with a look of true terror in his eyes and says, Malibu.
Yeah.
I have never been more scared in my entire life than right now.
Thanks for listening. This episode was Dungeon Mastered by me, Tal A.V. Azer, with Andy Canistra as Malibu, Carolyn Fox as Violet, Matt Gordon as Belton Freeview, and Katie Lear of Young Dragon Slayers as Viswava Fadop. Visit youngdragonslayers.com to learn how they help kids and teens forge meaningful friendships and practice social skills through online Dungeons & Dragons. This episode was edited by me and Carolyn Fox. Some sound effects in this episode are courtesy of Sirenscape. Remember, if you enjoy Podcast Party, please follow the show, rate us, and leave us a review. Thanks very much for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 8 of To Slay a Dragon.